You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, the Kid Counselor, and this is the Play Therapy Podcast, where you get a masterclass in child-centered play therapy and practical support and application for your work with children and their families. In today's episode, I am answering a question from Jeremy from the UK. And his question is about supervision. So I think this is an interesting topic because we typically don't talk, at least historically in the podcast, we don't talk a lot about the supervision process and the supervisory relationship. And so I think this is really important because we all at some point are supervised. And whether it's for RPT, which is registered play therapist in the States, or whether it's for your licensure, or whether it's just for professional training and development, we always end up in some form of supervision. And it's really important to think through that and understand what that would look like. So let me read Jeremy's question and then I'll share some of my thoughts. So he says, we're encouraged to attend supervision regularly. I recognize its value, but I'm wondering how to make the most of supervision, how to utilize this relationship to the betterment of my practice and my clients. And I'm wondering all this, especially in terms of the child-centered model. So yes, let's talk through this because let me begin my thoughts and my comments with, especially with this training program that I launched and all of the therapists reaching out to me about doing training groups with me. I have phone calls or Zoom calls with every single person that's interested. And it has been so interesting to hear the common threads that everyone says to me when we speak. And I would say probably 90% of all of the therapists that with whom I've had conversations have said, I did not have a good supervisory experience. I did not have a good supervisor. My supervisor was not child-centered. I really wish I could go back and have changed my entire supervision relationship. I was very frustrated with my supervision experience. I regret, I wish. There's very few that have been pleased with that relationship. And that's really alarming because the supervisory relationship is a huge part of our clinical experience. And we become better therapists from good supervision. And so if 90% of the therapists with whom I'm speaking are voicing concerns and frustrations about supervision, I think this is something that's really important to address. So I think my very first foundational thought is it is necessary, not ideal, not in the best case scenario, not I think this would be good. It is necessary to have a child-centered supervisor if you are a child-centered therapist. And more often than not, I hear people tell me that they did not have a child-centered supervisor. So right off the bat, my immediate response to Jeremy's question is, if you don't have a child-centered supervisor, you need to find one. And I know there are barriers to that. I know that's difficult. I know there's hindrances to cost and distance and who is a supervisor and who is child-centered. And I know it is not always easy, but it is worth it. And here's why. When you ask a question in supervision, when you are discussing something that's going on in supervision, when you raise a concern or a case or a scenario in supervision, your supervisor has to answer in a way that supports your theoretical orientation. Their answers have to support the model of therapy that you are consistently using. Their theoretical orientation and their understanding of the way the child is healing and growing and changing and what this looks like for the child therapeutically, it has to align with your model in order for you to get an answer that is appropriate for your work. So when we have so many therapists saying, oh, I'm a child-centered or I want to be child-centered, but my supervisor isn't or wasn't, that's a huge point of disconnect. That's a huge point of contention because I'm thinking through all of the different theoretical models in play therapy. And if you bring a struggle or a frustration or a question up in therapy, and it's specifically about, I feel like maybe I'm not saying enough. I feel like sometimes the child's playing and maybe I need to have a faster pace of my replies to the child. If you have a directive supervisor, the directive supervisor is going to give you a completely different answer than I would, for example, as a child-centered therapist, because I would say you need to have a pace that lets the child know that you're present, you're engaged, that you're expressing the be with attitudes. But if the child is quiet, it's okay for you to be quiet. If the child isn't saying much, it's okay for you to slow the pace of your responses down. That's not at all what a directive play therapist would say. Directive play therapists would encourage you to ask questions. They would encourage you to prompt activities. They would encourage you to bring up topics for discussion. That's not child-centered. So any answer you get is not going to actually be helpful because it's not aligned with your approach to the play sessions. So I think that right off the bat needed to be very clear. So Jeremy, I hope that's helpful for you. Here's my next thought, because you specifically said, how do I use this relationship to the betterment of my practice and my clients, especially in terms of the child-centered model? So here's what I have found the most helpful, not only as a supervisee, but as a supervisor. And I think maybe the disclaimer here is that my PhD is in counselor education. So all of my PhD program was training me to train therapists. And ironically, none of my professors in the program were play therapists. And none of the theoretical orientations that we talked about and none of the work that I did in my program was to help play therapists. So I'm kind of bucking the mold here and I'm doing my own thing. I've gone rogue and here I am running a play therapy center instead of working at a university. And here I am doing a podcast and training therapists instead of training clinicians in a university setting. So I know I've kind of totally ruined the entire plan that all of my professors had for me. But here's why I bring that up, because I've done a lot of supervision and I've been in a lot of supervision. And what I find is to get the best out of supervision, you need to come prepared with things that you want to work on. If you leave that up to the supervisor, if you leave your training and your growth and your knowledge and your enrichment of your play session process up to what your supervisor wants to discuss with you, what your supervisor thinks is worth discussing and bringing up and just talking about, I think that leaves you at the mercy of how prepared and knowledgeable and equipped your supervisor is. So what I have found that works really well is you need to come prepared with things that matter to you, that you want to address, that you want to work on. And not only that, be intentional and mindful and thoughtful about what those questions should be. Here's what I mean by that. If it were me, I would encourage you to not bring up skill-based questions. I would encourage you not to bring up theoretical framework questions, because those are the kinds of things that you already know, and those are the things that you have access to learn more about outside of a supervisory relationship. So if you're struggling with reflecting feelings, for example, that is a basic skill. It's a theoretical framework modeled approach. So therefore, you can just read books and listen to podcasts and do things like that to learn that skill better on your own. But practical application questions are invaluable. If you have a seasoned, knowledgeable, educated, experienced child-centered play therapist as your supervisor, the practical application questions are full of gold and rich wisdom for you. So for example, instead of saying, I really need to work on my reflection of feeling, which by the way, I talked about this in some of my earlier episodes, but that is really hard for child-centered play therapists. That's the hardest of the four pillars. Data shows that even the highest trained play therapists struggle to reflect feelings more than all the other three pillars. So if you are struggling with reflecting feelings, that's normal. But if it were me, I would not waste supervision time to talk about that. a practical application question would be, you know, I'm really having a difficult time of how to manage my own emotions when a child gets really dysregulated and tries to hurt me. Because when the child hurts me, it puts me in an emotional state and I lose my ability to unconditionally accept them. And I lose my ability to communicate the be with attitudes because I'm dealing with my own anger and frustration. How do you handle that? That's a practical application question. And if your supervisor can't handle a question like that, they're probably not the right supervisor for you. So your practical application questions are going to be extremely valuable. It's also helpful to do case consultation questions. So you have this really challenging case. We do this every single week in our staff meetings. We sit down and I say, okay, what's going on with your kids? And the cases that are the most difficult, that are the most challenging, that my therapists have questions about talking to the parents, or they have questions about what's going on in session. We talk about those cases. So case consultations are very valuable because it gives you perspective. It gives you objectivity. But in the playroom, sometimes it's hard to have those things. So I would encourage you to definitely use case consultations. And here's my final thought about how you can make the most of the relationship for the betterment of your practice and your clients. It's really helpful to be aware of your own weaknesses, your own areas of growth, and your own struggles. So sometimes before supervision is the most effective it can be, we have to put in the time and the energy and the work to say, what am I the worst at? Like, I might be a rock star at the Be With Attitudes, and I might be a rock star about giving choices, and I might be a rock star about even maybe all four of the pillars. But man, when a kid plays aggressively, I just really don't like when that happens. And therefore I don't like the child because they're playing aggressively. And then I get in my own head and then I go down this rabbit trail and that ruins the whole session for me. You might need to think through, what are your areas of growth? Where are the struggles that you find yourself consistently in? And you bring those up in supervision. Because yes, of course, we want to continue to hone skills that we feel we're handling pretty effectively. But more importantly in supervision is having the support to make the greatest leaps in the areas in which we find ourselves lacking the most. So if we can identify what our weaknesses are, that is very powerful for a supervisor to come alongside us and help us work on those weaknesses. Because we're only not good at something until we work on it and practice it and we get better. But sometimes it's hard for us to have insight and awareness if we're not having someone walk alongside us and giving us some thoughts and perspectives and suggestions. So bringing your weaknesses that you're aware of into the supervisory relationship, a lot of therapists are very hesitant to seem incompetent or incapable or unsure of themselves or that they're struggling with something. And I think that's one of the things that I work really hard to do at my center with my therapists is help them understand that owning what you're not good at and owning what you don't know and taking responsibility for not being a 30-year seasoned veteran therapist, it's okay. No one expects you to know everything at any point, really, but especially early in your career. I don't know everything. There are still things that I'm learning. And that's the point of being a therapist, right? Is to constantly be working on being a better therapist, a better clinician, and understanding this model better. That's why I do this podcast. That's why you listen to this podcast, because we're trying to be the best therapist that we can be from a child-centered perspective. But therefore, we have to recognize when we're not really that knowledgeable or not really that effective at something so that we can work on it. And so there should never be fear in your supervisory relationship about being honest and open and vulnerable about the things that you feel you're not doing well or that you don't know well enough. The supervisor's job is to teach you and train you and educate and equip you. So if there's any hesitancy on your part to be open about where you're struggling and what your weaknesses are, that's something that you definitely need to be more truthful about so that they can help you. You can't have your needs met unless you express them. So to kind of summarize all of that, your supervisor should absolutely be a non-directive child-centered play therapist. That's kind of a given, but I thought it was worth commenting about. And then here are my thoughts. If you ask practical application questions, I think you will find it more helpful. Case consultation questions are also very important in supervision, and identifying your weaknesses so that they can help you with that. And here's one final unrelated piece to those three. If you are finding that you're questioning the value you're getting from your supervision, if you're questioning the relationship you have with your supervisor, if you don't really feel supported, if you don't really feel like they are helping you from a child-centered model, if they're not a child-centered therapist and they're your supervisor, do not feel guilty for 1 second about changing supervisors. I've had so many therapists tell me, well, I just feel like I need to stick it out with them and I don't want them to feel like I abandoned them, or I don't want it to end in a bad way, and I don't want them to be... And there's all this concern for the supervisor's feelings, which that's who we are, right? Therapists try to think about other people, and we try to understand where other people might be coming from and what emotions they might have as a result of our actions. That's how we're wired. And that just makes us good therapists, hopefully. So I understand that thought process, but supervision is far too important to stick out with someone that's not the right fit for you. We would do this with any other field. If you hire a plumber and the plumber comes and they're drunk and they're a mess and they're late and they are disorganized and chaotic, you would call another plumber. If you go to a doctor and the doctor seems like they have absolutely no idea what they're talking about and they're not giving you any helpful advice for whatever issue that you're dealing with medically, you would go to a different doctor. It's the exact same scenario. You are not stuck or trapped or committed to be in a supervisory relationship that isn't serving you. The goal of supervision is to make you a better therapist. So if you have to say, I've really appreciated all the time we've spent. Thank you so much for being my supervisor for however many months, weeks, years you have been. I just really feel like I'm going to explore some other supervisors so that I can get a different perspective, so that I can have a child-centered supervisor. That's really important to me, so that I can get some new ideas and so that I can grow and be better. Whatever you need to tell them, truthfully, don't make something up, but, you know, let them know that you have goals and you want to make sure that your supervisor can help you meet those goals. And that shouldn't be a threat or any kind of frustration point for your supervisor, because supervisors know that not every relationship is always the best fit, and it's okay. So Jeremy, thank you so much for your question. I hope that that helps you kind of address the supervision relationship. And I think for all of us, we just have to kind of keep things in mind, and we have to advocate for ourselves, right? I mean, so much of what we talk about is advocating for our kids and advocating for play therapy. But as therapists, we have to advocate for ourselves too. And supervision is important, and it needs to be the right fit, and it needs to be giving us what it is supposed to give us. So thank you so much, Jeremy, for writing in and for asking that question. If you have something you'd like me to answer on air, please email me at brenna@thekidcounselor.com. And if you are interested in doing training with me, I have some private coaching groups for the child-centered model and private practice and all kinds of great things. So you can go to playtherapynow.com to find out more information about that. And every quarter we start new groups. So that is an evergreen training program that we've developed. Really excited about that. As always, I'm so grateful for your time each week. Thank you for those of you that reach out and let me know that this is meaningful to you. And some of you have even said you look forward to my podcasts every week, and I look forward to doing them every week. So I'm so grateful for each of you. We'll talk again soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.